But it's obviously very important to do it anyway. But I think one of the ways to start doing this work is acknowledging that it's close to impossible, but that we have to try and find the best way to do it anyway, because every additional life that you can spare or improve really matters to that individual. And I want us to try and make that difference.
Hi, my name is Amy.
And my name is James.
And this is How I Learned to Love Shrimp, a podcast about promising ways to help animals and build the animal advocacy movement. Animal Charity Evaluators, or ACE, are best known for their charity recommendations, where they assess animal charities and rank them based on their findings in order to inform and promote the most effective ways to donate in this space. In this episode, we speak with Steen van der Ploeg, who is their fairly newly appointed executive director. We talk through the latest release of the recommendations for this year and go into some detail on why certain charities and their interventions were selected. We talk about why their work is so important, the difficulties in the recommendation process, and their developing strategy for the up and coming year. Donations to ACE's recommended charity fund are currently being matched, so if you are interested in finding out more about the charities they recommend, head to their website, linked in the show notes.
We are joined today by Steen van der Ploeg, who is the Executive Director of Animal Charity Evaluators, also known as ACE. Steen wants to help people help animals, and ACE tries to do that by finding and promoting the most effective ways to help animals. So welcome, Steen. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. This is very exciting. You have accompanied me on many, many miles running, so this is fun.
Oh, that's nice.
Great. Glad to hear it. So great. I think we start everyone off with a simple question, although maybe not so simple. It's, what's an animal-related view you've changed your mind on recently and why?
Yeah, so I thought about this occasionally when I'm running and I hear you ask other people that question. I think my first reflection is that I haven't actually been in animal advocacy very long, considering my age. So in my 30s, I was still eating chicken feet. And now I am deeply concerned about the chicken feet that are in deep pain walking through terrible, deeply harming litter. So yeah, I'm even just including farmed and wild animals in my moral circle is relatively new for me.
How new do you think that would be? How new is relatively new?
5 years. So I'm
okay.
Yeah, 45 now, and it wasn't until in just before my 40th birthday that I started working in animal advocacy, and it wasn't, and then I also immediately became vegan. But yeah, before then, I wasn't really involved in the movement at all.
Is there anything maybe from the last year you think that sticks out as you've learned over your time at ACE in terms of things you changed your mind on?
I might also change my mind so frequently that I don't notice it as much. Because if you want to try to do as much good as you can for animals, then you have to be able to change your mind whenever some new evidence comes along. So it might be hard for me to not answer all of your questions with, I'm not certain, or it depends. Yeah. And I might change my mind as I'm answering you, or because you have some counter opinion.
And so you haven't been with ACE long, as you just said. Was there a kind of pivotal moment in what you were doing before ACE that led you to be a part of animal advocacy? Is there like one thing that you can attest to that was like the pinnacle moment that changed your ideology of work and what you wanted to put your efforts into?
No. I thought about this too. And you know how when you're in organizing, they often tell you to come up with this story of self and of us. And I can probably retrofit some story that led to me finding my way. But I believe it could be a variety of things, from just being in a time in my life where I had the freedom to really contemplate my beliefs and if I was acting on them, to having being in between jobs and trying to think about what to do next or thinking more about my parents. My mother has actually been a vegetarian since before I was born. Maybe it's just coming across certain reading. Maybe it was also learning more about effective altruism. It could be a variety of things, but once it became clear, I immediately jumped in and started in animal advocacy and for like 4 or so years and then joined ACE a year ago.
I think that's great. And I'm actually really pleased you've been as open as you have. And as you say, not kind of try to retrofit it into this, you know, wonderful narrative of seeing the light. Because actually, I think it's a really different entry for everybody. And maybe the one thing that's clear is that once you're in, and it's very, you know, it is that light bulb moment and it feels very clear, but actually the route towards that can be really different for everybody. So yeah, that's really interesting. And I'd be interested later, I guess, to ask how maybe that helps you evaluate a movement that also you don't know really well. I can think of a lot of advantages of that coming in really fresh, not having been exposed to the movement for very long, and how that supports that evaluation journey.
I think most of us would agree, probably listen to the podcast, or at least might think so, that ACE has one of the hardest jobs in the movement. It's trying to look across lots of animal advocacy groups and try to judge who is potentially the most effective and who deserves our donations and our support the most. I'd be curious to hear from you, Steen. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you're definitely not the first person to ask me that. People ask me quite often why I chose to do what I do, because it is complicated on quite a few levels. First, just trying to figure out what the best way is to help animals is incredibly challenging. And I'm sure if you're listening to this, you notice already, but I still want to list a couple of these examples. And Amy and James, feel free to jump in with others. But we're talking about trillions of individuals of very different species who experience life very differently. And we don't really understand their needs and wants very well. And all of them are also kept in very different conditions, not just the life and death of a shrimp is very different from that of a sheep. But even a pig who lives in Iowa has a very different life from a pig who lives in Nigeria. And yeah, it's also those very different countries that have very different regulations and customs, and those customs also really matter. Like, using animals is so deeply embedded in our cultures, but also in our economies. Like, there's a lot of money and traditions and feelings on the line.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we haven't been doing this for very long, so that means that there's also very, very little evidence. And that all makes it a super complicated set of problems. And that is also very hard to measure and to predict. But it's obviously very important to do it anyway. But I think one of the ways to start doing this work is acknowledging that it's close to impossible, but that we have to try and find the best way to do it anyway, because every additional life that you can spare or improve really matters to that individual. And I want us to try and make that difference.
So it seems like if I was trying to categorize some of the things you said, there's like a few different layers of uncertainty. There's like the fundamental uncertainty around like animal welfare and what animals need, and also the kind of the quality of lives that are currently existing. There's almost like contextual uncertainty in terms of what works in different countries and cultures and religions. And then there's almost like strategic uncertainty where it's not clear which interventions we should pursue, whether it's animal welfare focused, alternative protein, legislative, corporate. So there's like these kind of stacking layers of different uncertainties and considerations. So yeah, I can imagine that just makes everything very, very hard to be very confident in your answer. And like you said, also, the movement's relatively young, ACE is relatively young. We also have a lack of information about everything as well. That just makes everything so much harder.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just the figuring out what the best approaches are and the best methods to help animals. But then there are also the challenges in ACE's work about evaluating specific and comparing specific charities. or trying to get people to care enough about animals so they are willing to give money away and help them, because that's also a core part of our role.
Right.
And then it can also be hard to work with and support so many different human individuals who all care deeply about what they do and sometimes are very opinionated about it.
And so in terms of kind of the how, I think we'll get into the charity recommendations, which is obviously this huge pivotal point in ACE's year where you release the results of your work and those recommendations. And we'll get into the specifics of those in a little bit. But I guess before we do that, it would be really great to get the context of how you conduct those evaluations and create those recommendations. So I wonder if you can start by just giving us an overview of that process.
What we ultimately want, and that's probably the same for you and many listeners, is for animals to experience well-being, regardless of their species and regardless of if they have any value to us humans. And yeah, we just talked about how complex that problem is, and therefore it likely doesn't have a simple solution. So we need a diversity in approaches and also a systems mindset. And that means thinking in not just short term, but also medium and long term towards an anti-species society. So for our theory of change, we assume that highly effective intervention is like one highly effective intervention is not enough to achieve a world where animals lead the lives that they want as fast as possible. We need like a resilient, pluralistic animal advocacy movement with support around the globe through all levels of society.
And can you just say more why you think it's important to be pluralistic or take different approaches and not just go all in on one very, very promising seeming thing?
I often use the baking analogy that you need not just one ingredient, but multiple, and that each of these ingredients, there's a reaction between them. There is like a synergistic value. They support each other. If you want to get to an anti-species society, we need both alternative meat options. We also need a change in our policies and in our laws. And in the meantime, the welfare needs to be improved for animals. And we also need to continue to make the ethical arguments. And each of those components and others help each other.
I just think in terms of what's happening in the movement now, it's maybe there's like movement building efforts which contribute to something like we have more corporate campaign wins because there's more activists who are lobbying corporations. And then once you have a certain percentage of, let's say, companies who have committed to some policy like cage-free eggs, that makes it more likely that we'll have a national scale legislation or policy around cage-free eggs. And you can kind of see how these all tie in together. And this is just one example, but yeah, there's like this works in a variety of combinations.
I think that's actually a very good example. Because of that, I think that, well, as you mentioned in your introduction, James, like we want to help people help animals. So I view our most critical role as making sure impactful animal advocacy is better funded. Because in the end, it's about more people being able to help more animals. And yeah, for that, the movement needs to be able to grow.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, in a nutshell, that's somewhat our theory of change.
Makes sense. Great.
Maybe I'll follow from that. And well, how much priority do you put on that aspect of things, which is maybe growing the pot of funding for the most impactful animal groups versus trying to actually figure out which groups are the most impactful? Because it seems like there's like two components. It's find the most effective groups and drive them donations. And I wonder how you think about that relative prioritization and how that's maybe changed over time.
So I've only been here briefly, and I don't know exactly yet where we're going to go. But I do think that in the past, we have leaned more into the trying to invest in finding the best ways to help animals, and that in the future we might move a little bit more towards investing in promoting the best ways to help animals. And that's partially because the movement has matured. There are many other research organizations now, so maybe it's possible for us to collaborate more with peer organizations and learn from them. But obviously, we need to continue to make really wise recommendation decisions. I still think that there is a lot of room for growth, and that at ACE, we might have a very unique opportunity to reach a wider audience than is possible for, let's say, legal impact for chickens or a shrimp welfare project. For them, it's not really possible to try to convince the sushi eaters or the fried chicken fans who do really care about how those animals live and die to convince them to donate to their work. I think that's just not really suited for them. And it might be more possible for us to try and do that type of work.
So that's kind of less on the research side, because that was such a big part of ACE's previous work, right? That big research team, not only researching and finding out information about the charities you were evaluating, but actually conducting independent research, right, on different interventions, different topics, and producing independent reports. So it's kind of shifting away from that and perhaps more towards the evaluations and then the promotion of those evaluations into donation funnels. Do I have that right?
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible that we won't necessarily spend that much more time doing one over the other.
Yeah.
But more that we are trying to rethink who the key audiences are that we should reach out to and identify what the messaging is that works best for them.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel personally very excited about that vision of ACE, because I think, like you said, ACE has a very unique role in that, you know, just even just like the name, like Animal Charity Evaluators, like it's just a bit more reputable and seen as a bit more impartial. And I think that has the ability to reach much broader audience of people who might just care about cats and dogs, but actually be like, hey, you care about animals, why don't you think about chickens and and fish and other animals that you don't often consider? And I think, yeah, I think that kind of promotion aspect is very exciting. And I think we've talked about on the podcast before that the animal movement is, you know, relatively small in terms of funding, probably sub $300 million a year annually in philanthropic funding. And I think efforts to grow that are a pretty hot topic on the agenda. And I think ACE is one of the few organizations that has a really unique role to play, and I think could do a lot. So I think I'm personally very excited. So I hope it goes well.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be really important to try and to see how that goes and then evaluate if it is working. But someone must try, and I think we're in a good position to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
How much of a kind of learning curve is there in that process of charity evaluation each year? I know, as you say, there's kind of you're relatively new, there's other staff that are relatively new, there's been a big change of staff in the last few years. Does that also mean that the process has been altered and changed each year, and will that continue? Or do you feel right now quite confident and comfortable in the methodology that you're using to evaluate the other charities? What's that kind of shift in focus been like up until now? And do you think that will continue to shift in the future?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I generally tend to embrace uncertainty quite a bit. So I will never really stick to this is who we are, this is what we do. And yeah, like you mentioned, there has been quite a lot of staff change. All but one of our evaluation team's members joined during, I think, this last year summer, so summer of 2022. And they're all excellent, by the way. I'm very, very happy that I joined the organization with a brand new team of like super rigorous and kind and people who deeply care about animals, but also about the human animals in this movement.
Right.
A lot of that work that you're letting me talk about now is actually done by them, not by me. But yeah, we are continually figuring out what the best way is to go about activating our theory of change. So each year we try to sharpen the criteria based on available evidence and feedback from the effective animal advocacy communities, from the charities we evaluate, and from peers in our movement. But there is a good chance that over this winter, we will to not just improve what we do, but also improve how we do it and the approach that we use. So it's definitely possible that there will be some changes coming because we continue to try to improve our own impact assessments and talk with others about what we can change.
And so within that, so you talk about feedback from the movement, feedback from the organizations that you evaluate. So is that, that's kind of open public forms that people are able to fill in and contribute to the ACE process and give you feedback on that?
Yeah. So whenever we evaluate an organization, we then afterwards also solicit feedback from them about what the process was like, what the experience was like, how much work it was for them to participate. When we release our recommendations, we generally get a lot of responses on effective altruism forum or just indirect emails from donors or organizations or people in the movement. That's mostly what we base it on, but you might have seen that we have also been evaluated ourselves this year. So that's also feedback that we listen to and try to incorporate in how we go about our work.
Nice. Yeah, I think we'll definitely speak about the evaluation by giving what we can in a bit. And I'm kind of curious to hear on the methodology. I totally appreciate that this isn't your, like you said, you're not part of the research team. There's a whole team of folks working on the evaluations and stuff. But regardless, we'll ask you questions because people send us questions and we're curious. I guess my question's around the age-old question that we spoke about early on with David Coe and Heidi in our first episode, just in terms of thinking about short-term measurable results, maybe corporate welfare campaigns versus work that might benefit animals in the slightly longer term, whether that's wild animal suffering or sort of movement building that has timescales that maybe on decades, for example. And how does ACE think about weighing up these two different kind of ways of achieving good? And do you kind of prioritize one or the other? Or yeah, how do you think about this whole question in your evaluations?
That's definitely complicated. Before I answer that, I want to acknowledge that I keep saying how complicated things are and how uncertain I am. I do think that our methods and processes are really strong and account for a lot of uncertainties too. So I am absolutely confident that if you're listening and you decide you want to give some of your money away to help animals, that if you donate to our recommended charities, that you will positively affect their experiences. But yeah, there are, I think we have identified at least 25 different interventions, including podcasts and welfare corporate outreach. And generally, it's much harder to measure the impact of interventions aiming for that long-term systematic change or systemic change. In order to be able to compare charities using all intervention types, we use kind of like, I think a weighted factor model that allows us to combine quantitative information with more subjective quality judgment as well, or qualitative judgments. So we did use the same overarching methods for all charities, but the factor score that we score on differ for different approaches. Corporate welfare campaigns, lots of people are familiar with that. We look at, for instance, the type of animals that are affected. So let's say chickens, and then the number of animals that are affected, and how much suffering the commitment was likely to mitigate. And then say with commitments, the planned timeframe is very important, and also the likelihood of the follow through. So those are some of the things where it comes to cost effectiveness for corporate welfare campaigns that we look at. But for research, we maybe look at how broadly the research outcomes have been disseminated and how it has been used or if it has been used, and also like the thoroughness of the research methods and the maybe the importance of the research topic. So yeah, some of that can be scored somewhat objectively. And for others, it may be more subjective based on the researcher's expertise or their background.
Let me try get my head on this and try to give an example just to help myself and also if other people try and follow. Because I think there's lots of interesting spreadsheets that I will link and I encourage people to delve into, because actually quite it's great that now all this stuff is public and you share how you kind of have the different interventions ranked. And I think ACE actually didn't do that a couple of years ago, which I think is a great thing, because like, people generally very pro-transparency. It's great. People can actually see how you're doing calculations. But anyway, that preamble aside. For example, there's something like the intervention might be something like corporate litigation. And then within that, you want to look at the impact that has on the improvement of welfare standards. And then am I right in thinking for like every combination, ACE's researchers will put some subjective scores onto the long-term and the short-term estimated impacts, and then that feeds into a model later on? Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, so we look at the number of achievements that an organization has, and then for each of those achievements, we look at how much money that would have cost.
Okay.
That's one of the ways to look at that cost effectiveness. For impact potential for that criterion, we also give different priority levels to the interventions based on scale, neglectedness, and tractability. So for more immediate welfare improvements, we may score pretty high on terms of tractability, so on how solvable the issue is, and work aimed at, say, reducing wild animal suffering. There we might, they might score lower on tractability, but it could really greatly exceed it in scale.
One thing I think that's been mentioned a few times actually on the podcast by guests as well is this sense of like a pendulum, where at one end we're in the EA space, we're evaluating everything to the nth degree with 1,000 spreadsheets and trying to work this out. And then on the right is kind of new and perhaps novel approaches that we're just trying to experiment with to try and maybe think of new interventions that aren't currently on that list of 15 or new ways in which we can support the movement. Do you think that currently, and maybe in your opinion or in the work that ACE is doing, there's like a happy medium on that pendulum that we should be looking to be at, where it's not completely one end or the other, and perhaps not even in the middle, but just kind of a somewhere on that pendulum that you think is best to be at right now in the state of the movement as it is?
So what we do at ACE in this case is, with our charity evaluations, we try to look specifically at those organizations that we can be quite confident in that the interventions will have high impact potential. And then with, let's say, our movement grants, we try to invest in projects that are new or untested, either because the project in itself is quite novel in its approach, or because it's done in a region where the context is very different, or in a community where the context is very different. So that's kind of where we try to figure out what works and what doesn't, and try to create more knowledge for the movement. And that's also the program where we try to fund projects that are, like I mentioned, in neglected or underrepresented regions, but also where we fund the animal groups that are neglected and that don't receive a lot of attention yet.
Right. And are some of these new interventions that people are just experimenting with, and you could then, they could perhaps progress actually at a later stage once they've had a movement grant, built a bit of momentum within their own thinking and maybe test some areas and then perhaps even move into being evaluated as an intervention or as an organization. Is that a progression that you would like to see?
Yeah, in some cases that has absolutely happened, like with a shrimp welfare project. With other organizations, maybe that's not the case. Also because of our capacity, we have funded, I believe, 15 organizations or projects with the movement grants, and we cannot evaluate 50 projects or organizations.
Right.
But yes, that definitely happens. And we'd like to see more of that when possible.
Great. Maybe just to touch on the movement grant. So that's open to any organization, and it happens once a year now, am I right? Do you want to just maybe plug that with a one line as when people might look forward to applying to the next round?
The movement grants program is also undergoing some strategic revision right now, but we're very excited about where it's going. We have a new movement grants manager. I recommend doing an interview with her at some point too, because I think that program on its own really deserves attention. But I expect that the applications will open, let's say maybe February, and then it will take almost 6 months to go through the possibly hundreds of applications, and we'll make grant-making decisions will be done in, let's say, June-ish.
Okay, great. And so people can find out more around February time by going to your website. We'll put that in the show notes at the bottom. Thank you.
And to pick up on something you said before, Steen, you want to recommend groups that have a good amount of evidence behind them that they're achieving a very kind of significant or positive impact for animals. And that was a good question from Maurice, which we got on Slack. And he was saying, actually, do you think this is true for all of the ACE recommended charities, that there is actually very credible and very rigorous evidence that shows that they have had or are having a positive impact on the lives of animals? Because his argument was, actually, there's maybe a small number of groups that have really strong evidence, and maybe this is the groups that focus on corporate welfare work, whether it's the Humane League, Shrimp Welfare Project, Fish Welfare Initiative, or that they do farmer outreach, because the other recommendations rely at least somewhat on theoretical arguments or longer term theories of change. So I guess the deeper question here is, kind of, what's your view on prioritizing strength of evidence versus kind of expected impact, even though the evidence may not be as solid?
Some of our recommended charities definitely have more direct short-term theories of change that offer a higher level of certainty, while others pursue more indirect systemic goals that come with greater uncertainty, but the potential for far-reaching impact might be having a much greater impact on scale. So I think we might miss out on supporting highly impactful approaches if we only promote interventions that have easily measurable outcomes. And even for the interventions for which there is more evidence for them is still needed too, or more research, I mean, especially because that context matters so much. The actions that help pigs farmed in California might not help the pigs that are now in skyscraper factories in China. In fact, they might land you in jail. It might result in worse things for animals. And yeah, also what worked in the economical and political climate of a decade ago might not be as impactful now. So even where we do have research, we need to continue figuring out if those things still work now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm going to say one more thing about that. I think that over-reliance on a single approach ignores the inherent uncertainty in that effectiveness. And as I mentioned earlier, too, for the sustainability of the movement, to build a strong animal advocacy movement, we need diversity of solutions. What I like about what Dave Combe and Heidi said in your first episode is that to be impactful in a space with so little research and so little consensus on what's best, you need to combine a focus on what's working and with a more exploratory mindset.
And I think there's, to use an analog from a different issue or movement, I think global health is one I don't know much about, but I will try and give a superficial analogy, which is, even though we agree that there's lots of really great evidence behind malaria bed nets and giving them, and this is like a very kind of evidence-backed way to save lives from malaria, I think still funders like Open Philanthropy, who want to maximize impact on global health, are now moving to places with maybe less evidence, like global public health policy, and are now making grants in areas, whether it's like tobacco taxation, lead exposure, or something that maybe, and obviously policy work generally has less evidence behind it, but doesn't mean like the expected impact overall is less. And it goes to show that there's a trade-off between, yeah, I think focusing too much on certainty and the confidence in your outcomes versus like expected impact given your uncertainty. And yeah, I think what you said and what Dave said earlier on definitely makes sense, and that especially with a space that has such little evidence that we shouldn't only be reliant on that. So yeah, I think that makes total sense.
Yeah, exactly. And then yeah, at the same time, we're trying to, and all of us need to continue to come up with thoughtful ways of measuring impact for all interventions.
Okay, so let's dive into the hot off the press topic of the recommendations. It's obviously a very timely episode. They've just been released. Do you want to initially just list the organizations that received the recommended status from ACE?
Yeah, I'll start with one where, James, maybe you can help me pronounce this one. I think it's like Kafesiz Türkiye.
Kafesiz Türkiye. It's pretty close. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And they actually also have a full name that I'm really going to bungle, but I think they're mostly known as K3 Türkiye.
Actually, I'm very sad we didn't say their real name in the episode. So I will say it now because I have the privilege of being at least half Turkish. But it's Çiftlik Hayvanların Koruma Derneği, which is roughly Farm Animal Bug Protection Association. But yeah, also known as Kafesiz.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, they work on the improvement of welfare standards primarily. And I'll list some other organizations whose main outcome is also that improvement of welfare standards. So that's like the Humane League. I'm sure everyone who's listening knows about them. Then Fish Welfare Initiative. I imagine also everyone listening has heard of Shrimp Welfare Project, Synergia Animal. You've had Carolina on here, I believe.
Yeah.
And then
That's right.
Legal Impact for Chickens. They are one of the new ones this year. And they also primarily focus on the improvement of welfare as an outcome for now. And a lot of these organizations have secondary outcomes that they work towards. Let's say decreasing consumption of animal products, or the Humane League also has their Open Wing Alliance that also strengthens the engagement and the knowledge and skills of the movement. Some organizations that work more directly on the knowledge and skills increasement. Phonalytics, obviously, and New Roots Institute. And I think Wild Animal Initiative also falls somewhat in this category.
Yeah, I guess that they focus on field building, like academic field building. So I guess that's like a long-term movement building kind of approach.
Yeah. I think you could also maybe categorize Wild Animal Initiative under increased engagement in animal advocacy. And they probably also do a lot in terms of increasing prevalence of anti-speciesist values, which many of these organizations work towards. Of course, there's the Good Food Institute, who primarily focus on increased availability of animal-free products. And I'm just going to call them DVF, or the Danish Vegetarian Society, who primarily work on decrease of consumption of animal products.
Nice. And it's maybe worth clarifying that actually you've had a slight change in your recommendation approach to previous years, whereas before there was two tiers, now there's a single tier. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's right. We made that change for a couple of reasons. One of them is kind of what we touched on earlier, is that we want to reach a much wider audience. And there have often been a lot of questions and there's been confusion about what makes the difference between these two tiers. And in order to convert website visitors or people who wonder about helping animals into donors, we need to make things as simple as possible. And this is one of the reasons, but it will also reduce the amount of administration that we have to do. It will allow us also to make changes in how we disperse funds in our grant making towards these groups based on their room for funding. Those are just some of the reasons why we decided to shift to one level.
And do organizations choose to be evaluated or not? It's not a process that can happen without their collaboration, right? So there may be organizations out there who people could expect to hear on those lists, maybe larger organizations, but perhaps some choose to not be evaluated in that particular year. Is that right?
Sometimes organizations decline to be evaluated just because in a particular year they don't have the capacity to be evaluated, or if they're going through strategic changes, or for whatever reason they might have, we're not going to evaluate them if they don't want to, because we need their input. But we also do it to support organizations. So if they don't think it helps them, then obviously we choose not to.
Yeah. And the orgs have that status for a year till essentially the next round of evaluation, right? It's not a status that they can hold indefinitely. You evaluate them again each year, even if they've had a high status in the previous year.
Every 2 years now. That's mostly just because of the capacity that we have.
Sure.
We'll link the link to the blog post that announced the new recommendations, as well as the page that has all the recommendations, because there's lots of work that's gone into producing these recommendations. So yeah, you can kind of dive into all the various reviews and the reasoning and the spreadsheets that underlie why these groups are rated where they are. So yeah, definitely recommend people to look into that, because there's lots of juicy content, especially if you're a bit nerd.
Yeah.
Like me.
Please do. Please look them all up, because that's one of the big reasons why I'm talking here with you now, is because I love these organizations and their work, and I want everybody to know all about them. So yeah, look them up, support them.
And the easiest way for people to support all of them is actually just donate to the ACE recommended charity fund, right? So that will automatically disperse to all 11 of the recommended charities. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And yeah, so because there are a bunch of organizations that are international, for some donors who might care about their tax deductibility, this is an easy way to give to all of them. And yeah, with one gift, you support all 11 and you cover the wet animals, the wild animals, the winged animals, all of them.
Nice. Cool.
All around the world.
And actually, it's worth flagging, there's a $300,000 matching gift, right?
Right now, if you donate to the recommended charity fund, someone will match that gift.
Right.
I'm just checking. 28th. Okay. So when it comes out, people will have roughly a week to get the donation match.
Get
so
on
like,
it.
Go do it if you want to get your donation matched. cool. Well, I think let's move on to, I think that we have lots of juicy questions about this evaluation, both from ourselves and other people that I think we'd love to dive into and get your views on. I guess the first one that I think people have often you might have often heard, what people are curious about is the role of organizational culture and organizational health in your evaluation. And I'd just be curious, what's your most up-to-date thinking in terms of how do you assess this and why do you think this criteria is particularly important in evaluating what makes an effective animal charity?
Yeah, I totally understand that people have questions about that. Our current perspective is that it's important to understand whether there are any aspects of an organization's operations and management that could pose a risk to the charity's effectiveness and stability, because that might reduce its potential to help animals. And on top of that, because we are a movement of people that is still quite small, it could also impact the animal advocacy movement as a whole.
Right.
And yeah, so as an example, if an organization's leadership team is continually distracted by unproductive internal conflicts or staff is really disengaged, that might mean that an organization's performance suffers and that they don't produce the work that they could. If an organization is not transparent at all about their finances and are not using donors' money as intended, then that is also a big risk.
Makes sense. But I guess that, so the main reason for this is it's a risk to like the organization's impact in the future. So even though things might be okay now, the idea, for example, is if there is poor staff like morale, like bullying, that's eventually going to lead to poor outcomes because people will leave and people won't be excited. Is that kind of thinking behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it could also have an impact now to a degree. If we need the best and the brightest, and we need people with different perspectives and with various individual characteristics to be able to make the best decisions and to find the creative, most impactful solutions to these complex problems. And if there is an organization where those people are excluded or their perspectives are excluded, then an organization is not going to be productive.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously that's easier said than done. So we're really grateful to have the input of experts on this from Animal Defense Partnership and Scarlet Spark to make sure that the assessments that we do are as evidence-driven as possible. I know some people may be willing to sacrifice the mental health of a handful of humans for the reduction of extreme suffering with millions of chickens. And maybe they think that at a certain scale of impact, how optimal an organization's operations are run doesn't really matter anymore if the scope is so enormous. But personally, I do not think that I place too much moral weight on humans by caring about the people who do this really taxing work and by supporting those people. Because like, this is a long game, and yeah, we need those best and brightest. And there are not nearly enough people willing to invest their time and money in helping animals, because frankly, it's damn hard and the compensation is poor. So we need to take care of each other, because otherwise people are leaving. And that even if you just care about the consequences, that's important to value.
And the difficult thing about organizational culture and ACE's role is that when people get evaluated, lots of stuff is confidential. So if there's a staff survey, ACE may flag that there's a problem in the staff survey, but can't actually share what the problem is because they've agreed with the charity that there is confidentiality between them. So I think ACE has a tough role. It might flag a problem, not be able to give too many details. And that makes it hard for then, for example, onlookers like myself to be like, okay, there's apparently a problem, but it's confidential. What do I do with this information? So I think there's this like additionally hard role of confidentiality agreements between ACE and charities, which I think is very hard to solve, because if you don't have it, groups may not participate, and that's also a loss. So I think it's just a difficult challenge that you guys are facing.
Yeah, that's definitely tricky. That's why we're not fully invested in being a watchdog organization. We evaluate animal charities, and that's a slightly different role.
I'm curious to know, is there one piece of the criteria that you use that the movement across the board is always ranking low on? Are we terrible at like one thing that we could do with all being better at or improving?
Almost any animal advocate does not receive the level of compensation that they deserve.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I think I would just leave it at that. And so that is more a comment to funders than donors than it is to the organizations themselves. I think the movement has actually grown a lot more in maturity and staff support.
Right. It's kind of reassuring to know there's not just one gaping hole that we're like all neglecting, you know, we're on a par somehow. There's peaks and troughs in different efforts, but there's not one gaping hole.
I'd be curious, Dean, to get into some nitty gritty on some of the evaluations and some, at least some personal thoughts I have, and curious to get your feedback on them. So maybe I'll just pick out one or two examples of kind of evaluations that I was personally kind of like confused by or interested to know more. And not to, it sounds a bit like savage on the organization, it's not, but I guess I'd be curious to hear about how ACE came to the conclusion, which is ultimately, I guess, what I care about, because that's the point of the podcast. But for example, I think Phonolytics is a good example where you kind of spoke out before, the work they're doing is indirect, and yet they kind of can be kind of compared like for like with groups that are achieving kind of more direct wins for animals. But I guess I was particularly curious on how you did the cost effectiveness for Phonolytics, because you kind of speak about the number of studies they've published and the blog posts they've done, and then you give them a really high rating, the highest rating possible, 7 out of 7 on your rubric for cost effectiveness. And I guess I was confused by that, because in my mind, you're only looking at the outputs of the organization and how many outputs they achieved per $100,000 rather than what those outputs actually led to. So like, what are the outcomes? Because in my mind, what's, I think, important, at least for a research organization, is did it make advocacy groups change their strategy? Did it make funders change their strategy? And that's the outcome I think is important. So I'm kind of curious, in this case, maybe why, like, do you think that's accurate, that you focused on outputs rather than outcomes? And yeah, what are your thoughts on that cost effectiveness model maybe more broadly?
Yeah, first, this is definitely one of those questions where if you're listening and you have the same question and you want a really thorough answer, all the email addresses of our research team members are on our website. They're super friendly and have much greater expertise than I do. So follow up with them if you want to know more. But I very much agree that evaluating the impact of research is very challenging, and generally think that research is a very promising intervention and that the uncertainty is very high, especially with regards to if and how activists use those research findings. Because, yeah, that's the outcome, like you mentioned, that you care about, right? Not the output of number of research things. I'm pretty sure that's the technical term, research things. So one of the things that we do look at are the testimonials from advocates about how they used Phonolytics research in their work. And I believe Phonolytics is also themselves working now on a more systematic study of research and data as tools in advocates' decision-making. So once that comes out, that will be very helpful for us too. But we didn't just look at the number of studies per dollar. We also look at the quality of the research effort and how they implement their research efforts. So effective dissemination and selecting the research topics. And also, I guess, the quality of the research methods that they use.
Are you interviewing groups that use Phonolytics research or whatever equivalent? Like, you'll speak to maybe someone at the Humane League or someone at Mercy for Animals or someone at whatever, open philanthropy, be like, hey, did you use their research? How much did it impact your view? Is that the kind of stuff you would do?
I wish we had the capacity to do that, but what we do instead is ask for that information. So when an organization provides us with the achievements that they deliver on, they might include, so I believe Fanalytics shared some testimonials or quotes from particular people at specific organizations that we think do impactful work, and they explain how Fanalytics work helps them change their, let's say, approach. And then what we do is in our verification component of our work, we, I believe, spot check certain achievements that they report on. But we don't proactively go about reaching out to organizations and ask, hey, have you used them and how did you use it?
Got it. Okay. Well, then. And maybe I just feel confused about that all sounds very reasonable. I think that I agree. That's probably how I think one it's a good way to evaluate research organization. Seeing like the raw number of like 7 out of 7 cost effectiveness next to like 228 study summarized felt a bit confusing for me, but that's useful.
Yeah, I will not out this person, but someone on our research team, before they joined ACE, they also saw that Fanalytics was a recommended charity and they were like, how? Why? And then after this round, they were like, oh, I get it now. This totally makes sense. So you're not alone. So I recommend, following up with our team to ask more about what exactly that 7 out of 7 is based on. I don't know if I mentioned this or if it's obvious, but they also focus on specific animal groups and countries that we think are high priority. So for instance, they translate their work in, say, Vietnamese or Chinese, or do research in those countries that we have very little information about. So that also makes it important and impactful.
Just to not think about politics too much, I'll ask one more question about another group and just kind of the context for their evaluation, which is, again, not to be savage on this group, I'm just curious to know more. And in this case, for me, it's legal impact for chickens, because while I agree that corporate litigation is possibly very important and also working, so in this case, they brought a lawsuit against Costco for their the treatment of broiler chickens. And I think broiler chickens are obviously exist in huge numbers and have great suffering throughout their lives. So I think it makes lots of sense on like the scale and why you would focus on this. But I guess in terms of what actually happened with their lawsuit, I believe it was dismissed I don't know how the American legal system works, but it was dismissed by the judge and it's kind of no longer progressing, to my understanding. I think they might do a shelter resolution, but it seems like the original approach of litigation is kind of not possible. And that was, in my view, one of the most impactful ways they could have helped animals. So I'd be curious to hear what makes them so promising. Is it that approach still, or is it something else they're doing that you think is really high value?
Yeah, I do think that there are a couple of factors that make legal impact for chickens highly promising, but definitely within that high risk, high reward landscape. And as I understand it, a well-publicized case, that even one that doesn't reach a favorable outcome can still contribute to raising public awareness and laying the groundwork for the legal groundwork for future efforts. And then secondly, I believe that legal impact for chickens also has a very clear and systematic theory of change, where they indicate that to me indicates a very thoughtful and strategic mindset, with a thorough understanding of those complexities involved in advocacy work. And the plans for the future also really gave us confidence that they have a creative approach to litigation, and that will allow them to trial a variety of approaches to see what works most effectively in the context of law and policy.
Makes sense.
So yeah, yeah. Does that help a little bit?
Kind of. I think maybe I probably disagree slightly on like the value of like media, because I think there's probably other groups that get like more media per dollar than Legal Impact for Chicken. So I think if public awareness is like a key goal, I think other groups probably do that like slightly more bang for buck.
Yeah, and I will say that it also I also have very limited understanding of the U.S. legal framework. I do think that the challenges and potential failures are inherent to their approach, but even like one successful outcome, such as setting like a legal precedent, could have extremely large scale implications. So through these successes and failures, they might come to a case that will have much greater impact.
Yeah, I remember Edie touching on this in her episode, actually, that precedent setting that, like, you know, working on different species even sometimes by just expanding that moral circle, or having a case where, like you say, it had huge coverage but then didn't actually result. Sometimes there's arguably, obviously, smaller elements of impact in there, but it's setting the precedent for future cases and future work. I've actually found it really helpful going into some specifics of some of them. But as you say, Steen, I think just going in and looking at those evaluations, the spreadsheets, everything that's transparent on the website, hopefully people can have clarity over any of the recommendations that they're perhaps unclear of. So thanks for your brief clarity there. Let's talk then. So we touched on it briefly about ACE, Animal Charity Evaluators, actually being evaluated themselves by Giving What We Can. I'd love to know what lessons you learned from you as an evaluator being evaluated.
Yeah, I'm very excited that we participated in this evaluation by Giving What We Can. I have to say they were also really great to work with. I thought they were quite kind and patient and friendly. And I personally learned a bunch of things from it, like what it is like to being evaluated in your most busy time of year. So knowing what it's like to be on the other side is very useful.
Right.
But I think we can also learn from their perspective, for instance, on how to capture scope in our evaluations. I think we can potentially improve in that, also in how we set grant sizes. I think it was very meaningful, sometimes maybe frustrating, sometimes maybe scary, and learning that you are not perfect is always hard, especially because you care so much about the consequences of the work that you're doing. But having more insight and new information in how you can help more animals is obviously incredibly useful.
And so those results are they public yet, the result of Giving What We Can's evaluation?
Yeah, you can already find their reports on the EA forum. If you want to know more about ACE's perspective on that, we'll probably post something on the EA forum, potentially on our own website as well. And again, always feel free to reach out to us if you have a particular question about their approach versus our approach. That would be great. I think one of the main disagreements that we have is likely that we value that movement building and that pluralistic approach more than they do.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've only had a quick skim of it, but I think they only recommended the Humane League of the ACE recommended charities, which I think is some element of measurability bias happening, because I don't know, to think that that's like the only individual charity worth recommending feels a little bit almost like overconfident or a bit bizarre to me. But hey, I haven't read it in detail, so I'll go do that. But yeah, it's worth looking at. A hot take.
They didn't recommend the Humane League. They recommended the Humane League's corporate work.
Oh, wow. So even more granular.
They restrict their giving.
Even more narrow.
Yes, okay. Exactly. They chose a single intervention of a single charity, on top of also recommending the EA Animal Welfare Fund.
Got it. And yeah, I'd be curious to hear about ACE's internal evaluation of yourselves. Like, how do you evaluate yourselves and your own impact? And how do you, how do you think about that? Because obviously, if your name of the game is evaluation, it makes sense you're doing it on yourself as well.
That was one of my big questions when I joined the organization. And I immediately realized we needed to do a lot more in that. And luckily, the research team fully agreed. And Elizabeth, our programs director, has recently dove into that into much greater detail. So I can't actually say exactly yet how we're doing that. But we are looking at the counterfactual impact and also on looking more into how our evaluations make a difference or how our recommendations make a difference. And she is using both support from people at Mission Motor and external consultants to really figure out how to do that, measure that counterfactual impact. But we'll post more about that soon too, because we're right now in the midst of trying to figure that out. So kind of a lazy, can't really tell you yet answer, but I agree that it is very critical for us to know how we're making a difference for the movement.
I'll just add, there's the ACE strategy document, which I'll link as well. But I found it to actually be a very useful web page that kind of shows you kind of like three key goals, you know, increasing the rigor and quality of your work, increasing the money, going to high impact charities and interacting with a broad audience, and then specific tactics and kind of like almost goals within that. So I actually think that's a very useful thing for people to try to figure out what ACE is actually kind of aiming for. And I'm sure that provides some base of how to evaluate your own work.
I appreciate you saying that. I enjoyed writing that. So thank you.
Great page.
And what are ACE's plans for next year and beyond? Do you have anything concrete you can share at the moment? Is anything changing? Is anything staying the same? What does that look like for you?
We need to get better at what we do, not just our evaluations. But yeah, that movement grants program is also very important for us and especially for the movement. So that means defining or redefining the theory of change for each of those programs, assessing that impact, like you just talked about, and then implementing that, what we learned. And yeah, making those improvements to our evaluation and grant making criteria. On a personal level, I really want to get better at learning more about what works. And that means how we measure our grantees' work, but also study the research of others. In my first year, I haven't done that enough. So if you are listening and have some research or information that you think everybody in the movement should know about, and you think that I might not, please send it to me. So that's the content of the work. And then, like we talked about, we need to include more people in our outreach. So you might have seen that our brand has changed. We're working on making our website more intuitive. We want our language to be more welcoming. We're working on SEO stuff and defining our audience. Amy, do you mind if I say that you're one of the people who is helping us with that? So yeah, I hope that that's the type of work that will help us invite more people into our philanthropy circles so that more people will help more animals.
Yeah, great. I'm really looking forward to that project. And working with you on those, that messaging.
Cool. You're exciting. Okay, well, I think this is it's already been longer than normal, and I think we could talk for hours more, I feel like. But I think we always like to close with some quick fire questions. So I'd just be curious, what's some news related to animal advocacy, ideally, you're grateful for or excited about recently, Steve?
The expansion of the movement, both the increase in research and talent and also the geographical growth. I don't know how you feel about this, Amy, but being at the Animal Welfare Conference in Asia last month, I found it so exciting to see and hear so many driven people working hard to change the tide and help animals.
And do you have any media recommendations for listeners? Do you have any books or other podcasts or blog posts that have really shaped your thinking, especially being so new, as you were saying, to the movement? Is there anything that stands out to you in that category?
Yeah, so this was really hard to narrow down because there are so many brilliant people in this relatively small community and so many interesting sources. So I will try not to repeat anything I've already heard on your podcast. One of my other favorite podcasts to listen to while I run is Knowing Animals. They briefly interview academics who work on animal issues, often focusing more on philosophy and ethics. And I particularly like the episodes with Ava Meyer and Jeff Sebo, for instance.
Controversial recommending a different podcast, not a podcast, but I'll let it slide.
It's the second time that's happened now. It's just so rude.
You can cut it out if you want.
No, we're joking.
I also recommend following the work of Rethink Priorities. They have interesting projects all the time, so look them up if you don't know about them already. For instance, their worldview investigation team is doing some interesting stuff right now. They just had a webinar about shrimp, also very cool.
Great.
Something very different. I just started reading this book called Lead Together by Tanya Luna. And it's about the need for leaders to grow power in others so that we can lead together and get more done. So it's a bit more of a management type book.
Mm.
And I only just started it, but since it's written by someone who is in the movement and is told through a story about squirrels, it might appeal to you. Can I say one more thing? This is a heavy, stressful time, obviously, for many. So maybe also like watch a fiction movie like Zootopia or Okja if you can handle some depressing stuff, but don't just stick with the stuff you have to do.
Right. That's good advice.
I like it.
And so what's the kind of final pitch for the org then? What's the best thing people can do right now? And we'll link everything in the show notes, but what's that kind of one point that you want to make at the end of this episode?
If I just make one pitch, I don't want it to be for ACE, but for our recommended charities. So yeah, really check them out, support them if you can, or give your friends or family a donation to the recommended charity fund so that you help all of the 11. Because yeah, loving shrimp is great, but that love needs to be an action and not just a feeling. We can't be like kids who love dinosaurs or adults who love sharks on TV. If you care about someone, you must take care of them. So yeah, recommend the charities, check them out.
Nice, that's a great place to end. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, Steen, and for engaging with all the questions and including some of the difficult ones. I appreciate wanting to push back, but I think, like we said, you're in a difficult place. And I think, yeah, I wanted to air some of the stuff that people are thinking or maybe not thinking. But yeah, thanks so much for your time and appreciate your engagement.
Yeah. I love that this isn't the only resource as well, right? ACE is trying to be as transparent as possible. So there's always opportunities to ask more if people have questions from this that they want to know more about. There's always those avenues there. So yeah, whilst this has maybe just been like a brief touch on some of those topics, there is more depth if people are looking for it.
Yeah, especially the critiques are super useful to get. So please contact us. And yeah, thank you both for this work.
Sure. Thanks for your time, Steen.
Thank you, Steve.